Welcome to This Is Whole Life, a podcast from the Whole Life Church in Orlando, Florida.
Join me, Ken Wetmore, lead pastor, and Melanie Bachman, our worship pastor, along with our communication team, Randy and Lucas. Take a look back, a look deeper, and a peek into the week ahead.
Here we explore meaningful conversations about spirituality, community, and living with purpose.
We don't have all the answers, but we are walking the journey together.
Wherever you're listening from, you're wanted here.
This is Whole Life.
Hey everyone, it is episode 509 of This is Whole Life, where every week as we dig deeper into each message each week and learn to love God in a more meaningful way together, here we are every single week. And this week, to say the least, we have a lot of your questions to get to, so hang on for that. We have emails, we have Slack, we have questions with Lucas coming up. And that's where every week, if you guys, you know, if you don't send any questions, if you don't have any comments, it's just us, which, you know, we've proven that we are capable of filling any time frame you might have for us. But it was much more fun. It's much more concise, and it's much more to the point when you join the conversation from no matter where you are, when you are, podcast at wholelife.church or voicemail text 407-965-1607. And the full crew is back for the second week in a row, which makes me happy. It is to my right, Ken Wetmore, as I turn to my right, and then I turn at an angle to face Melanie directly crisscross across the table. And then to my left, it is the second half of the comms team, Lucas, and then myself. I'm Randy. And this one, we finished up with a message from the Greatest of These series, with a message about agape by Ken. And this was from March 7th. So you'll find that swiping up in today's show notes by Speaking of Grace. Swipe up and you will find episode 302, I believe it is, in that feed. And that will help make more sense of what we're going to talk about today. So let's start out with an email. And this is from Opal. And she asks, how do you convey agape love to those who have been hurt by others? How do we get them to see what agape is? And how do we share this type of love with non-believers and get them to understand the different types of love? Practical ways to get children to understand the different types of love and embrace and use them in daily life. We understand modeling, but it seems as though it doesn't make a difference. Or am I being impatient? We're all impatient, Opal.
Good question.
So what do you think, Ken? Are we being impatient? Is she being impatient? I'm being impatient.
Well, it's hard for me to know how long she's been working on that, so I wouldn't want to make a judgment on it. But I do know that the kind of love that we're talking about, agape love, does often take a very, very long time. And sometimes you don't ever see the fruit of it in the first place. Sometimes people get to choose. It doesn't mean that just because you love somebody well, you do good things for them, that they're automatically have to do respond to it in the way you want them to. If that's the case, then we're being manipulative with our love. I've been very guilty of in my life, where I say, well, I do this for you, and why aren't you being nice back? This is what I need. So I do think it can take a long time. I do think that one of the questions we have to ask ourselves is, are we being loving for the sake of being loving, or are we loving to try to manipulate somebody into becoming what we want them to be? Mm. I think that's also kind of part of the equation when it comes to teaching our kids. I think that one of the important things is to teach them that they're loved irregardless. Whether you're naughty or nice, you are loved equally.
We're not Santa Claus.
And again, that doesn't mean that there aren't consequences for bad behavior, but it doesn't change that you are loved and cared about.
I think the agape makes it feel a little bit different, though, when you think about all four different kind, where you're basically saying, I don't care if you're nice to me or if you're, you know, all the different, you're not like me. We don't think the same way. And not that we're, again, always saying with that little caveat that we don't want anyone to be in an abusive relationship that's dangerous or, you know, hurtful, but that it really is that the choice. So how do you explain that when someone is like, man, I've just been dumped on over and over again, and I don't know if I've ever seen this kind of agape love, because maybe my blind spots along with my hurt kind of compartmentalize everything, where you're just like, hey, I think I'm okay, but I don't think I felt this, and maybe I kind of want to.
Yeah, I think agape love is more about who you are than who somebody else is. And so in terms of trying to reap the fruits of that agape love and see that agape love happening from someone else's vantage point, you know, you may never actually get to see the fruits of that.
That's what I was thinking.
But yeah, I think kids can also understand what it means to love. You know, they're good practice times that you can use with kids. Oh, he wasn't, you know, this person wasn't very nice. Well, you know what? That doesn't matter because you are a loving person. You know, that's who you are.
Oh, that's a tough sell as a kid.
I like that one.
That's a tough sell as an adult. Right? I mean, yeah. It kind of is. Not lying here.
We're reaching for the stars here, Randy.
I know.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
No, that's
exactly.
You know, Opal, I really, when I saw your question come in, and you know, how do you share it? How do you explain it? And I think that's often very difficult. But I think if the way Ken described it really was, I felt like pretty precise in what to expect, what maybe not to expect. And really the difference is, he started the message, and I know we have another question to get to or a couple here real quick, but Jesus and Peter, I think that one kind of cleared a lot of things up for me in that first exchange that you talked about, and we'll get to that just in just a little bit. But I think for me, this is how I took it. I'm not sure that I am ever maybe going to feel the total agape love that someone else might have or might give to me. And that can be, I could be impatient about it. But maybe first I felt like maybe I have to give that love to someone else first as a gift that I maybe, okay, probably don't want to give, because that's just me. You know, sometimes you're just like, I don't want to do it.
Oh, that's why agape isn't about how you feel.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you do it, I feel like that's the best way to teach someone, maybe kids as well, when it's like, look, this is not because I'm choosing to do this because I am angry. I am all of these things. Still love you. And that really is the agape, because you haven't made it easy for me. You know, in certain situations, I think there's teachable moments there.
Yeah. The other three loves are always based off of something else that the other person does, whether it's storge, that's, well, you're my relative, or you're my somebody I've chosen family, or whether it's the phleo love of shared common interests, or whether it's the Eros love of beauty and that sort of thing. All the other loves have a component that's like, well, the other object, other person has to be deserving in some way. It has to have earned it. There has to be something that's there. And agape, from the Christian perspective, is the only one that simply is because God's asked us to be that way, to be loving. And then you have to go to what does that love look like? And that's defined in 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7. Paul defines what agape looks like in action and describes it out. And it doesn't say that you are patient and kind to only those who are patient and kind to you. It says this kind of love is patient and kind, and you are being asked to be that to your enemies. Jesus said, agape your enemies. And so we are to do the 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7 for the people that are the most difficult in our, you know, nobody would expect you to have Eros or Phileo or Storge for these people. Nobody, that's not reasonable. And that's what's so unreasonable about Christianity, because Christianity is predicated on selfless love, the love for people who are completely and utterly undeserving of it.
Well, Aaron in the Slack channel asked two questions, and this all goes to where you started with John 21, 15 through 17, and Jesus and Peter, and the three times, do you love me? She said, I'm curious of what y'all's thoughts are about something that happened earlier before the agape phileo dialogue between Jesus and Peter. In John 21, verse 3, Peter says to Thomas, Nate, John, James, and two others, I'm going fishing, and they replied, we'll also come with you. Was Peter going fishing because he felt he was not part of the group anymore? Like he was no longer fit to be a disciple, kind of like he thought he got himself fired in a sense or kicked out of the group. So is he going back to his old job?
Oh, what a great thoughtful question that is. What do you think, Aaron? Oh, I guess she's not on the line to tell me, but I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on that. Because I can share my thoughts with you on it, but I always think it's so much more interesting to have you think about it and to ponder it out. And so, you know, if you want to pause the podcast right here, if you're listening and take a moment to think about Aaron's question, it's a really, really good question. If you've hit unpause, here I am.
There you go.
So the part that I would maybe have us think about a little bit is one of the things I know about trauma is that when you experience it, you often go into automatic mode. You go back to whatever's the most normal, the most whatever. I remember getting some of the most traumatic news of my life and immediately picking up my clothes hamper and going to do my laundry, which makes no sense. Like, theoretically, I should have called a counselor. I should have sat in my room and thought about things. I should have done all these other things, but instead I just pick up my laundry and kind of go about a routine. And I don't know, but I kind of wonder if that's what's going on with Peter. The world does not make sense. The world is upside down. And so he just goes back to the one thing that's constant and that he can relate to and that brings normalcy into the chaos.
And Ken, I think you did what you should have done.
Laundry.
The laundry.
Laundry's
honestly, because that's how, I mean, that's how humans process. So to say that I should have done something more lofty, I really don't think so. I think probably that was really therapeutic in that moment. I mean, I've had some of those moments too, where it's, you just go to your default.
Well, this was, and if I can just follow this up a little bit. Yeah. What was crazy about this was in a boy's dorm, and I'm walking down the hallway and I have somebody actually stop me as I'm walking with my laundry, and they said, "There's something wrong with you. What's going on?" And it led to a conversation that was life-changing for me.
Well, and her second part of that was, do you think the disciples say, you know, "We're going to go with you," because they didn't want him to do something stupid? Were they being protective, you know, going off alone in the water with his thoughts to fish? Or did they say, "We're coming," because they wanted him to know they didn't judge him, reject him for his denial of Jesus? They were still his friends. Or do they all just know what to do now because they all felt unworthy?
Well, I wonder if they just didn't know what else to do.
That's what I was
at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you do when all of your plans seem to have evaporated, you know, and the person you were following isn't there to follow?
Yeah.
Yeah. Peter must have had a lot of questions in his mind. Firstly, is Jesus really alive? Is that discipleship, has that been terminated?
Yeah.
And even if Jesus is alive, does Jesus want him as a part of the 12? I mean, all the others ran away, yes, but he denied Jesus 3 times in a pretty spectacular fashion. So I'm sure there had to have been a lot of thoughts in Peter's mind, and I'm sure the other disciples are probably all grappling with their own grief, with their own concern, their own worries. So, yeah, I think that, and that's where I think holy imagination is a really beautiful tool to put to use. When you hear these stories, put yourself in their shoes and ask yourself, what would I have been doing? Does what they do match what I would have done if I were them? Why would have I done that? And think it through. And I think that's one of the beauties of the Bible, is that we often feel like there have to be concrete answers. And this, you know, it has to be, we have to know the exact true answer to that. But sometimes, you know, we don't know what was going through Peter's mind when he said that. So all we can do is have conjecture. I think it can be blessed to really ponder that out and think about it.
Well, I've never thought about it in the way that you know, when Jesus is saying to Peter, you know, "Do you agape me?" twice. And then he comes back and he's like, all right. You're not taking the bait on either of those. So, you know, do you phileo me? And as I'm thinking about that, I would not have wanted to be Peter in that. because I really
feel... Peter didn't want to be Peter right then. Yeah.
I mean...
It says he was deeply grieved. I mean, the word that's used there is a very powerful word. I mean, it was kind of cut to the core by what Jesus said.
Well, and if you follow, I mean, if we're going with John's story on this, you know, there was a time when Peter would have said, oh, I will follow you all the way. I will do all of this. I'll do all of that. And so maybe this was a moment of self-reckoning.
Yeah.
Like, okay, now I know what my limits are. I know what I actually can offer and what I can't. And I want to be authentic and honest about that.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And the beautiful thing is Jesus does not rebuke him. He doesn't say, come on, Peter, show some agape love. I just got off the cross. I've shown you what it is. Why don't you just get it together and do like I do?
Didn't I give you the name Peter, by the way?
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't thinking about it, but I love that answer because, and then Ken with the, he didn't rebuke him, just the obvious that you're just maybe not thinking about, but when you put it in that context, because I would have been shaking in my shoes to go, I can't lie because he's the ultimate lie detector test, right? Like he doesn't have to hook me up to the machine to know that, I guess I don't. And no, I don't.
And that's exactly what Peter says. You know all things.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know I phileo you.
And doesn't Jesus call him Simon? He doesn't call him Peter. He calls him Simon, which I think can also be kind of a metaphor. No, not a metaphor. It was like maybe an example of, all right, we're starting over. We're going back to before you were Peter, before I renamed you. Maybe we're just going to start over here, you know, and go from here.
But that's rough all in itself. If you're still thinking as Peter, going like, I mean, I was this reckless, you know, person. I found him. I followed him. I did this. He kind of rose me up a little bit. He gave me a platform, and I swore that I would, and I would, and I would, and now I didn't, and now I can't. But now I'm demoted. Also, like maybe that was a relief. Like, man, that was too much for me. What? That just seemed. And why does God do? Why does God do that?
Is it, I don't know if
is it be, to teach it? Is it to teach it?
Demoting as much as it is a new beginning.
Yeah. Okay. Oof. Starting over,
I don't
though.
Know. We're just guessing. We're all just guessing.
We're guessing, but it makes a lot of sense.
Well, another important thing to recognize is that Jesus doesn't demote him because he gives him things to do. He says, feed my sheep, feed my lambs. Yeah. He basically... And I think this is a really important thing for many of you to listen to and really hear clearly. You do not have to be a perfect person to do ministry for Jesus. Because Peter, he's coming off of one of the, I mean, if you're Peter's rabbi, he failed the final. He got to the final test and he just could not have failed it worse. I mean, he failed badly.
Yeah.
And Jesus, instead of saying, okay, guy, you know what? You're off the team. You're not going to be a part of this. You can be on the sidelines. You're going to need to retake the class. Jesus says, do you love me? Do you phileo me? Or I'm sorry, do you agape me? Peter says, you know, I phileo you. And then Jesus says, okay, feed my sheep. He gives him something right away. He says, just because you messed up does not mean that you don't have worth and importance and something that you can do in my kingdom in spite of the failures that you've experienced. And the book of Acts goes out of its way to kind of show you that Peter doesn't actually get his act completely figured out. There comes a point where he's hanging out with the Gentiles and having a good time, and he's doing great ministry with them. And then some Jewish folks show up in town, and he immediately stops eating with the Gentiles and kind of backs away, and pretends like he wasn't doing that. And Paul calls him out and says, hey, you know, why is it when they show up that you're not doing what you did before? And because Paul is kind of a jerk at times. But he's right. But the point is, Peter didn't necessarily get everything right even after that conversation. Certainly Paul doesn't get everything right. Paul does some, like I said, he does some things that aren't particularly nice And that's, for me, gives me a lot of comfort, because I know I do some things that are not nice, and I'm a jerk, and I'm not always who I aspire to be and who I know that God can help me be. I fail. But that doesn't mean that you're necessarily disqualified to feed the sheep and to feed the lambs. And that's, to me, the hope that I find in this particular story. I'm sure there's many other amazing things that you yourself can bring out of this story for yourself and learnings. But that's one of the big ones for me, is that on my worst day, Jesus doesn't give up on me.
Well, do you think Paul would have gotten a different answer in this questioning? Or maybe the questioning doesn't happen if he hadn't denied Jesus. I mean, the story would be completely different. But I mean, it's not like he got the prodigal, go feed the pigs. You know, go slop the hogs. I mean, you're still being asked to do something that is,
well, don't forget,
feed your sheep.
Don't forget that son chose to feed the pigs.
Right.
That was the son's choice. That was not where the father sent him.
Right.
In fact, as soon as he comes home, the father completely restores him. And so this is kind of important to that Peter story too, because a lot of times we as Christians have somebody come home and we're like, okay, you get to feed the pigs for a while because you've been naughty and you have not, and you're going to need to earn it back. And at least in the story of the prodigal son, that boy goes out, he squanders the family fortune. The father doesn't make him feed pigs. He chooses that for himself. But when he's ready to come home, the father is watching from a long ways off and goes out and embraces him. And let's also not forget about that older brother who is not particularly nice and who is not particularly agape, and it throws a temper tantrum in front of the whole neighborhood when his little brother comes home and starts getting a party. And he's like, where's the party for me? I've been home this whole time. Haven't I done everything that you ever wanted me to do? Which is a lie. He hadn't. He didn't go looking for his younger brother. And he good and well knows it. So he has a temper tantrum. And yet, what does the father say to him? Hey, why don't you stay outside and cool off? And then you can come in. Or, hey, you know what? If you're going to act that way, your younger brother is going to go ahead and take over here because he gets it. And you don't know. You know what he says to the little brother? He says, hey, why don't you come in and celebrate with me? Just come on in. Celebrate. Your brother who I thought was dead is alive. Let's come in. Come in and celebrate. So for all of us older brothers out there, we like to think that we're not the younger brother. We don't run off. We don't squander the family fortune. But in some ways, I really think what the older brother did was worse, because he didn't care about his younger brother. And I think that, I mean, it's the epitome of being unloving.
Yeah. Well, Older brothers have their drawbacks. I mean, I can be, you know, I'm the youngest, so I can tell you.
Well, I'm an older brother, so tell me about it. Tell me about myself.
No, I would say that.
We'll have, you know, my brother call in. He can tell some stories.
Yeah, as could my brother.
Probably all true.
Yeah, but thinking about that and how, you know, there's always a time, I think especially with boys, when it's like the hierarchy and the need to be alpha, or at least the idea of being the alpha in the two, you know, makes strained relationships. But at the end, you know, older brother did a good job. So I know he doesn't listen, so he's not going to know I gave him kudos. So that's good. Keep that under wraps.
I can't let him get a big head or anything.
Keep the score low is what I try to do here. So tell me one thing that I'm not sure I put together correctly, or maybe I didn't put it together at all, was how you said in the secular Greek, agape has very little meaning to Greek philosophers, but that the Christians kind of expanded its definition. How did this all happen? Because I missed how this actually worked out.
Well, we do it today. We'll take a word that has one meaning, and we're looking for a word to describe something that we don't really have a word to describe. And so we'll take another word and we will tweak the meaning of it. We will add nuance to it. It's one of the reasons why when you read through older translations of the Bible, sometimes we miss some of the nuance because, for instance, let's just use 1 Corinthians 13 as a great example. It's in the older translations, they said charity. That's the word they use for love there.
Really?
Yeah.
Charity.
And so that's the word that's used. And the reason it's used is because people back in those times, that was the closest word for loving kindness and that isn't deserved that they could come up with to meet the agape word. Mm-hmm. And so today we've changed it because charity doesn't quite mean the same, have the same packaging as it did then. It has a little bit of a different flavor to it today. And we do this oftentimes. We will take a word and we will add meaning to it, or we'll subtract meaning, or we'll sometimes even completely change it. And so what happened was the Christian writers were trying to find a word for love that would talk about basically a love that doesn't, that's selfless and that doesn't require anything of the other. And none of the other words in Greek came close. So they took this really bland word, agape, that the philosophers used for barely anything. It's, you don't see the word agape very much at all in Greek philosophy. Hmm. And when they do, it's just, like I said, it's just a very bland, it's like, how are you doing today? Doing good. I mean, it's like, it's like a good can mean all a wide variety of things. It's just not, and they take and they, you know, as I said in the sermon, they give it a glow up. They change it to, they add to it, I should say, to make it fit the concept of what the gracious, unfailing love of God is and what God expects out of those who follow God's lead.
And you feel like that's a good, it's a good description. It's a good definition, what they've gloated up to. Versus what they, well,
I don't think I'm going to sit there and contradict the biblical writers on what they chose to do. But what's fascinating to me about this is that it really, the two writers that really lean into this heavy are John.
Okay.
You see it in 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. You see it in the book of John, and then Paul. Paul leans into it, but John really leans into it. That's what John's thing is. But both of them kind of lean into this new adaptation of agape and okay. kind of create meaning around it that the whole Christian community coalesced around and started adding that meaning to.
I read something about this that it had, the meaning of agape had already begun to be expanded through the Jewish tradition.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
But it was more of a covenantal type love.
Okay.
But when Christianity came around, the covenantal love was more like toward the people who were like you, the people in your community, the people around you. And Christianity kind of erased the boundaries for that. So agape was on its way, and then Christianity came around and blew up the boundaries.
It seems to make perfect sense when you started adding things like it being self-sacrificial and that it's a descending, it reaches down.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I wrote it or you said it, but reaches down to the ugly and pulls it up is what I wrote down, because it's mm-hmm. what it felt like. Even if you didn't say it, I'm not going to say you did because I'm not sure you did. But
I'm pretty sure I did.
Swipe up in today's show notes again and go over to Speaking Grace.
I had another Southern person come up to me and say, I can tell you're from the South. You use the word ugly the same way I do. So that's the way I grew up in the house. And don't you be ugly. And it wasn't referring to your looks. It was referring to the way you acted.
Oh, bless your heart.
Yeah, exactly. That would often come right after that.
I was just going to say.
Bless Randy, your heart. You're being ugly.
That's not very nice.
And you need to get that figured out.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And then when you said agape love is expected to grow. And then here's where I kind of bumped into what my initial thoughts were. Like Opal talked about in her question, like the practical ways to understand it, to teach it to. And I thought, you know, when you have to wait to kind of to feel it, to and maybe understand it, like if this is the first time that you've maybe been presented with it in this way, the way Ken presented it, which I think was really smart, because it really, each one of these weeks have brought you another step closer to where we've landed. And it all makes sense now. And I'm sure I never thought of it exactly this way, but I think the wait is easier when you understand. And when you went to John 3:16, I was like, oh, he's bringing the most popular verse in maybe that even non-Christians across the world probably know and could probably recite, but that you used a different version, and I didn't write it down, but for this is how God loved the world.
Yeah, New Living Translation translates it that way.
NLT. He gave his one and only son so that everyone who believes in him will not perish but have eternal life. And the action and the best part of himself is what he gave us and how much he loves us when we didn't deserve it. And I know that that's probably rehash for a lot of us, but when you just hear it in those different words, it hits, to me, it hits different in realizing that in that action that you don't have to take, the choice you don't have to make if you don't want to, then it seems like if you've ever gone into your, thought about a situation in your life where you actually did make the choice and went, all right, I'm just going to swallow my pride or whatever it is, I'm going to, whatever I have to do to love this person in this instance, this time, this situation, then that's what you have to hold on to while you're waiting if that's where you are now. Because I think if you can remember that time, you also remember how good it felt to be the person who was like, it's dread leading up to it, but afterwards, and you, that weight is lifted. And if you've ever forgiven someone who maybe didn't deserve it, you know, you just, and you start that process of, because that's agape love. And you just, you work through it. And then at some point, not too far down the road, you're going to go, man, you know what? I'm feeling a little bit lighter. I'm not as angry, or I'm not as moody, or life seems better. And it's, and then you have to think, well, what did I do to get here? And you can always trace it back, if that's where it was, to forgiving somebody that maybe didn't deserve it, because it's a big weight that lifts off of you. And then, you know, the decision is theirs, whether how the rest of that works itself out. But to figure out that when you add that to the love is actions, not feelings. And then the big one, you said, the question is, do you choose God? And do you choose to ask even when you don't feel or see God? Ooh. Too many times the answer to that is no.
No.
I can think of things recently, you know, and I go, ay. You may have a something good over here, and then you go, ooh, bad over here, and it's not consistent. And I think that's the one that makes it seem long, because it's like, why can't I just do this part better more often? Because then I don't think it would feel like this. I don't do well, or I'm not getting it, or I'm not. But also I'm like, there's only so much bandwidth of that kind of love that I think we're prepared, or that we're capable, at least in, depending where you are in your walk, that you can give at any one time. Is there a limit or a reserve on this?
Well, it's probably like a muscle. You have to work it out and make it stronger.
Melanie is suggesting going to the gym, the yes, spiritual gym, to make your agape better. Do you have a membership? Anything you could pass along to us, Melanie?
Yeah, I do have a membership. I need to go more often.
Isn't that, it's always the way it is with the gym. Well, we got to start marketing. We got to figure out how to start marketing that gym better. I think that's the whole problem.
The whole life gym.
The whole life
gym. Starting a small community.
Are you starting that small community, Lucas?
I'll wait for Melanie.
Oh, wow. And then, I think you said this one other time that I can remember, but I like the way you ended things off with go love your world and explaining. And I think if people didn't get it through the rest of it, that's a pretty powerful, like, I can say I love you because it doesn't require anything on your part. I don't have to know you. I just have to love you. And that doesn't compute at first. You have to sit there and think like, wait a minute, why would that be? No, that's not the love. That's not the love I know. That's not the love that I struggle with. Or maybe it is because I didn't know I needed to struggle.
But can't you, don't you see sometimes images on social media of someone in a situation and like your heart goes out to that person? You don't know them. You're not,
that's true.
You don't know anybody who knows them, but just recognizing the humanity in that person and feeling that response toward that person's situation. Not that it's all about feeling, but I mean, no, you know what I mean?
No, I can say that too. This makes me just think of, Saturday night, shout out to, if any of y'all are associated with our Pathfinder Club, or if you don't know about our Pathfinder Club, it's OrlandoCityPathfinders.com. You should check it out. The concert that they did downtown on Saturday night, I thought they absolutely did an amazing job. All the teams that were part of Whole Life did a great job.
Yeah.
And the other part is, you know, there's a, and Heather and I have been talking about this since, because it really brought me to tears when we were there. I have a picture on my phone of Emily standing up on stage with another little girl holding her hand, like, it's okay. And even when she was, you could see her constantly battling her fears. If you know her, you know that there's finger people that talk to her on her hands. That's like, you can do it, Emily. I can. Of course you can. Are you sure? You've been practicing. And she, you know, she has these conversations with herself that only someone with an extra chromosome could possibly do and make sense of it all. But, you know, she's up there and she's squinting her eyes and she's trying to like curl up in a ball. And the little girl, you could see her just squeeze her hand. And she would be like, okay. And of course, then she would nail the long note that went way past everybody else and wasn't quite on key. And
I didn't notice that.
The little the lady sitting in front of us was like, you know, it was an involuntary reaction, but it was kind of like, I get it. Like, I'm not offended. It wasn't, she missed on that one. But and she held it way too long. So situational where she's new to singing. So it's, and other than me and her in the truck in the morning, which is really a dumpster fire. So I don't have like cams in my truck, like for, you know, road cams. Or I don't ever want footage released of my voice and her voice singing in the morning because it's really horrible. But to watch that, and that was agape love, man, that really hit home for me because, well, they know who she is and she's a part of the club. There's a distance because kids in that age, they're learning how to, you know, just like we are, how to love people that aren't like us, that don't act like us, that don't talk like us. And, you know, we've been just thinking it through, but it right then it was like, that is agape love, that I don't have to hold your hand. I don't have to help you, but she did. And she wasn't upset about it. She was smiling. And you could tell she was in tune with what Emily was going through. And without it, she would have not made it. Heather would have had to go on stage because during practice, I mean, they were helping her and she still was like, so afraid, so afraid. Of course. And then when it's over, you know, they're trying to drag her off the stage and she's waving and telling everyone bye. And she loves the post-production accolades as much as she can. And so anyway, that one made the end of my day and made my whole day and probably this week too. So that was a good example right there that the kids were showing. And I thought that was really cool. So I guess agape has to be the greatest of these because it's in the Bible, faith, hope, and agape. And the greatest of these is agape. So we don't need to do a poll. And if you disagree, you're wrong. I mean, probably.
We like to discuss things at Whole Life, Randy. So we'd have a discussion and you'd still be wrong. But we could have the discussion.
That's awesome. Lucas, do we have questions. Yeah, did we answer any of them in the process?
Some of them.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it's worth it.
Go for it.
If agape is considered the most important form of love, why are the other categories of love still relevant?
Well,
if what? I'm sorry. Can you repeat it?
Sure. Why are the other categories of love still relevant?
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Well, just because I love vanilla ice cream doesn't mean that there isn't a place for chocolate ice cream, strawberry ice cream, pralines and cream.
Oh, pralines and cream.
Yeah, there we go. So what I would say is I don't think agape love, I do think that agape love is the greatest of them, but I don't think it means that we don't want to sometimes be a little bit more definitional and say, you know, I love my child and that is a storge kind of love. And I can also agape my child as well, but you can also be a little bit more specific, about things.
The agape love, sometimes that's the only way.
I know Kyle listens to this, so I'm just being careful here. So,
all right. This is more of a comment than a question. I love the series and the challenge to express the different types of love described in scripture in our own lives. However, even with the best interpretations and hermeneutics, we will never fully describe God's love because of the human limitations of language. I wonder if keeping each of these forms of love in our hearts will help us to, in a small way, to make a difference in a variety of relationships in our life.
I think so, and I agree with you. I think as great a word as agape is, I think it does is a poor shadow of what God's love fully expressed is. And the best explanation we have is the Gospels, reading Jesus' life here on earth. That's the fullest. And again, I think we don't begin to understand the depths of the love that God has for us.
Was that a T-Cinco question?
It was.
Oh, Tammy.
Good job, T-Cinco.
Okay. I thought I recognized the love in that tone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the last one, is it possible to agape people that are not necessarily likable or trustworthy?
Not only is it possible, it's just required. by Jesus.
It's required.
I tell you, you must. And can I just say, it seems very unfair. It's hard to know the damage that some human beings can dish out and then hear Jesus saying, and you got to love them. And maybe that's why I find it's so important to read 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7 and really understand what love is. I think that a lot of times we think that love means that we have to be reconciled to a person who's dangerous, and I don't think that's what it means. I think that it is the willingness to allow another person into relationship should they choose to enter into that relationship, and to have patience for them and to be kind, even when it's hard. I think that's important. But I think that a person who has no interest in a relationship and is just bent on destruction, we are to love them, but that doesn't mean that we have to allow them to create destruction. And it doesn't mean that we have to be their best friend.
And sometimes the amount of destruction they've caused, also doesn't lend itself to being in relationship again. I think, you know, we've talked about this before. There are some people we have to love from a distance just because they cause damage or have caused the kind of damage that makes them not trustworthy.
Yeah, no, I forgive for yourself and with God and work that out. And then how the rest of it plays out, you know, you're in control to say, yeah, I don't think I'm ready for this, or maybe I'll never be ready for this, or let me get back to you. Don't get back to me. Well, that's kind of, well, you know, because in those situations, it sometimes has to be so, put you in an awkward position. Like, I don't want to have to be rude or unkind, but I also have to let you also have to know that I'm serious. Like we can't continue.
There's a lot of predators out there who weaponize Christianity's call to love, and they basically try to weaponize it and say that Christianity's call to selfless love means they get to destroy and create incredible harm. And so I think this is a call for all of us as Christians to not allow that to happen. We don't need to allow destructive, predatory people to manipulate us into allowing them to create more destruction.
Thank you.
And more pain and more suffering. That's not loving either. I just always tell people, you know, I'm always wary of somebody who says, you have to forgive me. My forgiveness is between me and God, not
right.
That's where it is. And if you've hurt me, you don't get to tell me, you don't get to tell your victim when they have to be okay. And especially I find that they tell them that they have to be okay so they can often come back and suffer some more. And that will really get me going. I've seen it unfortunately too often in domestic abuse situations that I've been involved in as a pastor. And I just will, say to the person, you know, you perpetrated this. Now you're going to have to live with the consequences of it. And it doesn't mean I don't love you. It doesn't mean I don't care about you.
Right.
But there are consequences for actions, and you have hurt somebody, and you don't get to tell them when they have to be okay with you again. You don't get to do that. I mean, you can try, but that's it makes me question whether you have learned the lesson God wants you to learn out of this. Because generally, if you've hurt somebody, the right answer is, I can tell I hurt you incredibly. And I can understand if it's hard for you to want to reconcile or forgive. And I just want you to know, I am incredibly sorry. And how can I make it right? How can I make amends? That's the question. Rather than saying you need to be okay, the question is, what can I do to make amends? And sometimes making amends is giving distance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're like, but I don't want to give distance. Well, it's then you be loving and do what you don't want to do.
Well, and thank you for the realization that some may not immediately pick up on, where someone wants to use your faith against you to say, well, that's not what the Bible says. And it's very effective if it's ever happened to you before.
Oh, very.
And yeah. Even if you're not maybe the closest you've ever been with God, there's something innate in you that says, man, if I don't do this, or if I don't allow this, then maybe I really am the bad person. Because at that point, if you've been hurt, then you're not always putting everything exactly where it needs to be, because things are jumbled, and you hear that and you go, oh yeah, that's me. I'm trying to be a better person. I need to get closer to God. So this is part of that. And so, yeah, I'm glad you added that distinction. Okay. This is, man, didn't seem like this one lasted long enough. Greatest of these. So what's next?
Is the end here?
Oh no.
Is it the end of the world? We're going to be talking about
Armageddon?
Well, maybe.
Oh,
that word may be used in the CERN.
All right.
You know, with the war that's happening in Iran, with everything that's happening in the world, I think this will be a good Sabbath for us to have a conversation about setting dates and times and what the end of the world is going to look like. And so we're going to have a conversation around that. We're going to talk about our current events. Is this it? There are many within Christianity that love to say this is the big one. This is the within our own denomination, there are people who are like saying, hey, this is it. You need to be ready. So I want to talk about what it means to be ready. If this is the end,
why not?
What does that mean? How does it change what I'm doing if this weren't the end?
Yeah.
So we want to have a conversation about that this next week.
So one off?
It is. And then the week after that, we have a wonderful Voice of Whole Life, one of our church members. Ooh. Who also happens to be an associate for the ministerial department, Javier Diaz. Has he been on our podcast before? I think he has, right? We've been on his.
Yeah, so, you've been on his, yeah. And Carla's been on his. I don't know if he's ever preached here, though.
But Javier, he'll be preaching in 2 weeks, so he's going to be up, and then I'll have another sermon that's going to be a standalone.
Okay.
And then we will be jumping from there into, I do believe, Easter.
Oh, Easter cometh.
It can't be that close.
It is that close.
Is it that close?
Is that closeth?
And it's closer thing quickly.
Speaking of, the end is near.
Oh, man.
And we have and Melanie and her team are really coming up with a really tremendous Easter. You will not want to miss Easter here at Whole Life.
Oh, I don't know if I've even seen any plans yet. Have you been keeping them under wraps?
A little
Lucas
bit.
Has.
Yeah, it's going to be game changing.
Well, geez, I am officially out of the loop. So maybe it's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine. And maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. Yeah, see what I did there?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I caught it.
That was good.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Never mind. Okay. Let's see. Was there anything else coming up? We did.
Well, I do. I want to say something. I want to say a huge thank you to the over 500
That's
people
right.
who are part of our Whole Life community. who showed up and showed out this last Sabbath. They went and did, I would say, easily over 1,500 hours of community service projects in our community, made a huge difference. And as I've said on Sabbath, this Sabbath is not just once a year we go out into our community. This Sabbath is a celebration of what's happening every week of the year. Our church members are so engaged with our community. There's so many different people doing so many incredible things within our nonprofit sector and within the service at large in our community. I could just tell you story after story, and this church is so engaged in that. And so when we have this one Sabbath, it is not to just once a year do something. It's a once-a-year celebration of what's going on the rest of the year, and it's an encouragement for anybody who isn't aware of the different opportunities. It is an opportunity for them to say, oh, this looks like something that I might be interested in not doing just this Sabbath, but maybe I could be volunteering in this place the rest of the year too.
Yeah.
Whether that's, you know, helping out over at Orlando Junior Academy as a volunteer with them, or whether it's helping out at Habitat for Humanity, or whether it's helping out with the American Red Cross, or whether it's helping out with iDignity. Thank you. Or the Desire Foundation. There's so many different groups and places where you can serve. And that's what this last Sabbath really was about. And I just couldn't be more proud. I want to say a huge thank you to Tomas Diaz and the Orlando City Pathfinder Club for the great job that they did putting together a really neat program. It was great. And just a shout out to our friends over at Forest City Spanish and their music group, The Spot. Just their music was so good. Just what tremendous worshiping of God. And it was really beautiful. And so for all the people that participated in that concert, I just want to say a huge thank you. I couldn't be more proud.
A children's choir.
Children's choir, yeah. Tito, Madeline,
Lucy and Phil and Crystal
and Levi. Come on now.
Levi.
The Pathfinder Praise Team. Mm-hmm. Just a great job there. I just so proud of everybody for all the effort, and you just wouldn't know everything that goes into making these things happen. So just kudos to them. And also just want to say huge note of gratitude to Anderling Brady, our Justice Ministries pastor, who really makes all this happen. I cannot begin to describe to you how much work it takes to find 600 to 700 to 800 opportunities to serve. You kind of think, oh, well, there's got to be all these different service projects. It is serious work to be able to figure out how to find these kind of projects for one day.
And on a weekend.
So kudos to her and just the vast amount of work. And this was, and kudos also to the Justice Ministry Advisory Council that supports Anderling and this church's work in the Justice Ministries and service part of what we do as a church. They help work at this so much. There were so many of them that I went to one spot that they were out doing something at 7 a.m. And there was just hats off to everybody who does so much to make that happen. And they did it on a short schedule this year. We had just had one less than 6 months ago. And so normally there's 12 months between. So just quick turn, and everybody just pitched in and really made it a huge success.
Yeah, and we wouldn't be able to do Connected without the building of relationships that Anderling and her team does all year long, because a lot of the people, one of the people that helped us with our project at United Against Poverty, it was her day off, and she came in just for us, and that's not something you do for just anybody, but they'll do it for Anderling and her team. So that's how much her work means to the community.
Well, and I was just going to mention that, you know, sometimes people, Lucas and I were at a conference today, and they were talking about how do we market our church. It makes it sound like a business, but we also have to spread the message about what's happening and what we're doing. And sometimes people will take that like, oh, they're patting themselves on the back. But you have to know our members also to know how chill they are, even in a project like this. Alfred and his team was over at Hebney Nutrition, right? And so we went over there because they're a new partner with us. They partner with Advent Health and some other places. I've been there before. We filmed, Stanley and I filmed them. They have a great kitchen. They teach the community how to cook and make healthy dishes. So I kind of knew what I was getting into. But when we got there, everybody was outside washing cars, trucks, and their bus. And I was like, Alfred, what's up? And he's like, well, it turns out that somehow there was a little miscommunication and we don't box food for going out into the community on the weekend. So when they got there, the team's like, well, let's see, what could we have them do? And so they got out the buckets and the stuff, and they washed their bus and their truck. So when they go out in the community, they look sterling. It looks good. And they rolled with the punches, and they, you know, they had jeans and like clothing for indoors, and it was a little warm in the sun, and they all pulled it off. And it was just like, yeah, this is what we do. We just come and we serve however we can. And, you know, God made a good day out of it. And we found another partner, and he connected with their person, and it was just really good. So shout out to everyone that just rolls with the punches, however it goes, and makes a good impression and a solid impact in the community. All right, so that's it for this week, I guess. There was something I was going to tell them. Oh, well. Put it in the Slack. How about that?
There it is.
Got a question? Put it in the Slack, and I'll respond. Okay? All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. Thanks for listening to This Is Whole Life. If today's conversation resonated with you, we invite you to subscribe, share, and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. To join the conversation, send a text or voicemail to 407-965-1607 or email podcast@wholelife.church. To learn more about Whole Life Church, worship with us online or in person, visit our website, wholelife.church. Until next time, this is Whole Life.